Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, everyone. I'm Vincent Joe.
Hi, I'm Kathy Reed.
And I'm Allison Reed.
Hi, I'm Ashley.
Hi, I'm Grace.
We're from the Haydenettes.
I am Mark Henretti.
Ciao a tutti, siamo Rebecca Ghirardi.
E Filippo Ambrosini.
E vi diamo il benvenuto a
This Weekend Skating.
Welcome to This Week in Skating, the weekly podcast bringing you the latest news from the world of figure skating. Here are your hosts, Daphne, Gina, and Matteo.
And we're back. Not only are we back with the podcast, we're back from the 2025 World Championships.
Yes.
Gina and I are both at our individual homes. Matteo could not be with us this week because he is traveling. But Gina and I are excited to bring you our thoughts on the 2025 World Championships. Since we were both there, we have some notes and takeaways and are excited to bring them to you.
Yeah, we did record one episode while we were in Boston, and that was it. We weren't able to record again. It was just so busy. You know, if you were at the event, you know, it went from one event to the other event. And of course, we throw in having to interview skaters after they skate, plus press conferences and downloading photos and editing photos. There's just so much that goes on. So we just could not find another time to record. So we're just going to bring you everything in this one episode that maybe we would have talked about if we had an opportunity to record. But we're going to start with some of our general thoughts on the event itself. I mean, it was incredible. If anybody was in Boston, I'm sure you're feeling the same thing we're feeling. It was just an incredible event from start to end. And one of the biggest things was the crowd. Sold out crowds Friday night and all day Saturday. And I believe it was close to being sold out for the exhibition on Sunday. I wasn't there, so I can't say for sure. But great crowds through the whole week, even earlier in the week as well. I've never seen, you know, the 300 level full in that arena. I don't remember it being that way for 2016. Maybe it was, but that was a while ago. I can't really remember. But it was just great to see people in the last row standing up to see people watching in the rafters, which is way up. That's the 9th floor of the TD Garden. Really, it was just so cool to see that many people, and the skaters loved it. I mean, any skater you talked to said they loved the crowd. It was great to skate to that big of a crowd, especially like some of the disciplines that may not get full crowds like that. They were excited for the crowd too, and the crowd was very supportive all week. Not just for the Americans, you know, yes, of course, you know, they were standing for our American skaters, but for skaters that weren't even Americans, you know, the Finnish ice dance team that did Chorus Line. Yes, they were standing for that. Kaori Sakamoto, Chicago. Just again, they were a very supportive crowd. The flags for different countries. It was just a great atmosphere.
Yeah, I have to agree. I felt like the skaters had an opportunity to compete and perform in front of a crowd that was pretty knowledgeable. They seemed to know when someone doubled the jump. So It wasn't just about did they make a major mistake that was visible. It was like something like doubling a jump or just little slips here and there. They were pretty aware of it.
Yeah.
And it was exciting. And looking back to last year in Montreal, where I thought the crowd was also fantastic, this has been like 2 years in a row that the crowd has just been so into the performances and so supportive of the athletes that were out there. And I really enjoyed that. I think being at a competition that's almost a week long, it can start to feel like you're drained. You're very tired by the last day. And the skaters have said before that the crowd can motivate them to perform their best and to keep going out there. And I think the energy of the crowd and the atmosphere in the arena definitely helped me get through the last day because I was pretty exhausted by then.
Oh, yeah, sure did. And the other thing some of the skaters talked about with the crowd is how close the crowd was to them, especially the skaters from Europe and Asia, you know, because in an NHL rink, which the TD Garden is the home of the Boston Bruins, the audience is pretty close to the ice, where in, you know, Europe and other places, the audience is back a little bit more. And so for some skaters, they liked it. It was nice to have the crowd really close to them. Others weren't used to it. And, you know, and they thought, wow, I never have skated with the crowd being that close to us. Another thing with that is also the size of the rink. We were in an NHL compared to an Olympic size. And for some skaters, that was an adjustment. And they talked about how in the weeks leading up to Worlds, they would put cones in their Olympic size rink to kind of show where the rink would end in the NHL rink. So for some skaters, it was an adjustment from an Olympic to an NHL. But I thought that was interesting because I'm always so used to the, you know, the audience being really that close to the ice. And I forget that that's not always the case in other areas of the world where arenas, the audience is further back. So that was an interesting as well. But yeah, the crowd really made it. It got you through the week, especially, you know, as you said, Daphne, on Saturday night, they were flashing their phone lights in the arena, and that was really cool. And it just was a really cool atmosphere.
The U.S. is our home, and I feel really fortunate that we've had two Worlds in North America the last 2 years. And I found myself on the last day thinking, man, I think maybe I really would like to go to Europeans or to Prague for Worlds next year because I feel like I'm going to be missing out on something after having all of this fun because it's just been cool having all of the top skaters in the world, you know, on our doorsteps for the last two World Championships. And not only in North America, but so close in proximity to where we live.
Right. Yeah.
That it was relatively easy to get to. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to miss that. I think that as soon as they announced Boston as a host city for 2025, the organizing committee really jumped into getting things started. They were selling tickets. They were promoting the event. And I think that probably helped sell a lot of the seats. They were really proactive in selling this event. So I'm really glad that the skaters got to feel that energy in the arena.
Yeah. And I hope this shows the ISU that, you know, the U.S. can host the World Championships, and it's not another 8 years until we get to host another one again. And not even just the U.S. again, but, like, I mean, Montreal was very successful last year, too. And so I hope this just kind of says to the ISU, hey, we don't have to always have worlds in Japan, that we can get the crowds here in North America and we can host a really good event too. And so I hope we're not waiting 8 years for another world championships here in the US or, you know, again, in Canada too. I mean, like, let's let this be just maybe a few years and let's have another one.
Well, I think one thing that was interesting is the ISU is trying a number of new things in an effort to bring the crowd more into the event and to connect the skaters more to those who are in the audience. And my first introduction to a lot of the ideas was the photographers meeting that took place just before the start of things on Wednesday. And that was when Selena from the ISU went over some of the new things that they were going to try at this competition. Now, we'd heard about these new LED boards because one or two of our friends had seen them ahead of time. So we knew that they were going to be there. And that presented some photography challenges. And I felt like the arena was darker than usual. And that, yeah, was something I wasn't used to. But that was only one of the things that was going on. Another thing, and I think they tried it at a prior competition, but before Worlds, they had been introducing each of the groups of skaters by having everyone come out, and then they would introduce each skater or team in that flight. In this situation, they had them run out through a tunnel. And, of course, I loved the song they picked was Shipping Up to Boston by Dropkick Murphys, which was really popular in The Departed. But it also was an anthem for the Red Sox in, I think it was 2007. So it was a popular song, and the Dropkick Murphys are incredibly popular. So it was fun to hear the audience really get excited every time a skater was announced. And also, I felt like the skaters were kind of treated like rock stars.
Yeah. I was always watching to see how the skaters were going to come out. I mean, some just kind of casually walked out. Some were pretty, you know, in the zone, very serious. Alyssa Liu cartwheeled during one of her, you know, introductions. But it was always kind of like, okay, how are they going to come out? Are they going to do anything different? Are they just going to be kind of chill? So I liked it. I really liked it. And I agree with you with the Dropkick Murphys. That was perfect. But I always found myself trying to get into my spot after I had been running around just so I could see the introductions of the warm-up group. But yeah, I liked that. I don't know what the skaters all thought of it. Seems like, you know, most of them enjoyed it because they were having fun with it. And they would show them too, like right before they came out, them all kind of lined up in the,
yes,
in the backstage waiting to come out, too. So, yeah, it kind of was fun. And of course it gets the crowd really excited right away. And then as they came out and they then, you know, they say, and now your 6 minute warm up begins, or 5 minute warm up for ice dance. We had Ben Augusto and Ashley Wagner as the in-arena hosts, who then introduced them even further, you know, so gave them the background that we're so used to hearing too as they're doing the warm-up. But they were really like getting the crowd going too, because they would introduce them and they would say, let's hear it for whoever, and then the crowd would go crazy. Mm-hmm. And some of this, you know, skaters as they were warming up would acknowledge like the crowd when their name was called and whatever. But I thought that was even more just kind of really getting the excitement going from as soon as they came out to, you know, Ben and Ashley really, you know, ramping things up too, but with the introductions. I liked that part of that. And yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, me too. I loved too that behind the skaters in the Kiss and Cry, there was this like little video of like, it looked like a still photo, And if you first looked at it, you thought it was a still photo. But then suddenly, the skaters would either look up or turn their heads to the front. And it was kind of just engaging, like, fierce.
See, I couldn't see that. And I think I asked Melanie about that. Melanie, our photographer friend who was photographing for US Figure Skating, she was right down in that area. And I asked her what was happening because I thought it might have not just been a still image. It might have been moving. But, oh, I did not, you know, I couldn't see what it was doing.
Yeah, the ISU definitely invested a lot in LED technology because there was that. Also, the skaters' Instagram... their Instagram accounts were put on the LED lights, like higher up between each of the seating sections. And one of my favorite things is the skaters were asked to give a message to the audience, and there were so many fun ones. I loved, you know, I think Ilya's was, let's get this party started.
Yeah, yeah. Amber's had her Calm Beast. I saw she put Calm Beast. The skaters admitted they didn't know where that message was going. So Roman Sadowski, who put something about subscribe to his YouTube channel, he had no clue where. He just was told, hey, you need a message for the crowd, but he didn't know where that was going. So he admitted, well, that kind of didn't make sense, or people wouldn't know what I was referring to. But yeah, I liked some of the messages, and that got the crowd, when they saw the message come up, they would, you know, cheer again or make, you know, laugh or make some noise again. So that was a really neat feature too. And then after the skaters skated, we had quick one question interviews in the Kiss and Cry. Ben Irashley went in there and asked a quick question, and usually the skaters were either out of breath. So it was really a one quick, you know, answer. Or it was mostly about the crowd, you know, thanking for the crowd. Not everyone was liking those whole interviews. Piper Gillis was one of the skaters who did not like the post-skate Kiss and Cry interviews. But for the most part, you know, some skaters liked it, some didn't. Yeah, so that was a neat feature as well. It kind of, then the coaches would kind of come into the Kiss and Cry and then join the skaters, you know, as they waited for their scores. Yeah, that was a new feature as well. And then, of course, the leader's chair, which was next to the Kiss and Cry, that came into play only in the free skates and free dance for the second half of the groups. And it was... We've had something similar to it in the past. Even in Montreal last year, it was the leader's couch, but it was not visible to the fans in the arena. It actually was right next to the mix zone. And so the skaters would go from the couch to the mix zone and then back to the couch if needed. But this one, everyone got to see. It was right there, right next to the Kiss and Cry. They were showing it as the skaters were, you know, in the Kiss and Cry getting their scores. So that, I don't know what the skaters thought of that, but, yeah, that's another way of trying to kind of, I guess, make it exciting, for the people in the audience, is like, oh, are they gonna stay in the leader's chair, are they gonna move off, or, you know, kind of make it a more dramatic moment, I guess. But
I think they did it to add like dramatic moments, because as you're going out to compete, you know the person you're trying to beat is sitting in the chair and vice versa. But I think other things happen as a result of that leader's chair. You got to see camaraderie between teammates. I remember, I think it was Monet Chiba had skated, and she and Kaori Sakamoto, who was the leader at the time, had a huge hug, like, and Alyssa and Kaori. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of, like, reactions and hugs and connection that you could see between athletes, and I really enjoyed that, and I think it kind of endeared the athletes to the crowd even more when they can see that those connections exist, that even though you may skate for the USA, you still are friends with a skater from Canada or France or Great Britain or Hungary, like all of these different countries, that skating is a small community. And the support that everyone has for each other, despite being competitive with each other, it's really, you know, heartwarming to see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it was cool to have it there. You know, again, don't know what the skaters thought of it, but you got to see not only the dramatic part of it, but you got to see the camaraderie as well. The ISU also released a new logo, which yes. is, I believe it's got the skaters' images with it, right? Is that? Mm-hmm. Okay. So changing it up a little bit, I like it. It looks more modern.
Me too. Me too. I actually ran on my way to another part of the competition. I stopped by their little room, the ICU media room, and just said, hey, I just want you to know, I love your new logo. It's so modern. It's such a difference from the one that you had. And I just really think it's eye-catching and great. Because it is. Like, it's better. And I'm excited to see it on more ISU things, especially over the next year as they change out the old logo and put the new logo in. This event was different for another reason. In between the women's and pair short programs on Wednesday, there was a remembrance held for the victims of Flight 5342. And it was very special to be in the arena for that. They had a choir on site. They had the governor of Massachusetts. They had the mayor of Boston, Doug Lane, who of course lost his son Spencer and his wife Christine in the crash. He spoke for the families of the victims. Because this was like a 30-minute event, it wasn't a lot of time for each person to be able to say, you know, really long speeches. And for the moment that he was allotted, I felt his message was on point, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah. They also showed videos up on the Jumbotron, and with the LED boards were able to put the names along the boards as well. So I thought that was nice too. We also heard from interim U.S. figure skating president Sam Aukshire, who shared a poem. Again, it was very brief. It was a short remembrance. We somehow were running behind a little bit, so it seemed like it kind of got cut just a little short, maybe like a few minutes. But I thought it was a, you know, really nice remembrance before we kind of got into the competition. But yeah, I thought everyone who spoke very well, and for the time they were given, because they were given a lot of time.
Yeah. In addition, there were also some really special performances in the gala, including Max Naumoff, who of course lost his parents in the plane crash, Ilya Malinin, who won his second consecutive world championship, had a new exhibition that brought a lot of emotion. I know several people who were in attendance said they were in tears. There was also national development team skaters on site who were performing in a group piece. I had to catch my train back home, so I didn't stay for the gala, but everyone that I know that was in attendance said it was a very emotional experience, and they were glad that they were able to attend.
Yeah, I wasn't able to be at the gala too, because I was driving home. But yeah, from what I've seen online, from what I've heard, it was a very, you know, beautiful tribute. It's just too bad we couldn't see it. I don't think it was being streamed. because what was shown yesterday on NBC was The Legacy on Ice from Washington, D.C., that aired yesterday afternoon. So if you didn't get to see that, that was on NBC. I know I recorded it so that I could watch it again, and I haven't watched it yet. But so that was playing yesterday instead of the exhibition at the World Championships. But hopefully maybe we'll get to see it. Maybe they'll put it online or something.
I hope so. I think that it would definitely be something that those who missed it would want to be able to catch. So maybe they will air it, or maybe they'll just make it available on Peacock. So I think, Gina, we should probably jump into our discussions about the competition.
Yes, and coming up at the end of our discussions on the competition, we have two stories we want to share, but you have to stick around until the very end. So you're going to have to listen until the very end for those stories our favorite memories from Worlds. So, but we will get started talking about the pairs. That was the very first discipline that got medals in Boston. And so Riku Mira and Ryuichi Kiara reclaimed their world title. So they lost it last year to Deanna and Max, and now they got it back again. And this is their fourth world medal. They have 2 gold and 2 silver. They were second in the free skate. For me, I don't think it was the gold medal winning performance, in my opinion. Their short program, though, was great, and I thought, you know, they were the leaders after the short program, but for me, I didn't think that was a gold medal performance, and I was a little surprised that they had won it, and I'll explain a little bit, but they talked about in the press conference being very happy that they won, and they admit they made mistakes in the free skate. They said it has been hard for them this season it's been hard for them since they won their first world title because they've had some injuries here or there. So it hasn't been, they've had some ups and downs since that first world title. But again, they were very happy that they won. Where I thought the gold medal performance was, what belonged to Germany's Minerva Fabian-Hasse and Nikita Volodin. They won the free skate. They moved up from third after the short program to claim the silver medal. This is their second world medal. That skate was amazing, their free skate. That was who I thought was going to, you know, claim the title. It was just a really good free skate. They were very happy to be on the podium. They said their free skate in Boston was the best they could do. And if that was the best they can do, watch out, because we could expect them on an Olympic podium next year and on podiums throughout the season. They were proud of themselves and how they ended the season. So they were really good. Italy's Sara Conti and Niccolò Machi won their second world bronze medal. They dropped from second after the short program to finish third overall. Their short was really good. Their free skate had some mistakes in it, and they said that in the press conference that they were happy to be on the podium, but the free skate was not the best one. They said it had a lot of mistakes. And they mentioned competing after Minerva and Nikita was tough because they came after Minerva and Nikita, and I was not in the arena for Minerva and Nikita. I watched it on a monitor from the mix zone, but I could hear the crowd and the audience really going crazy after their skate. So I'm sure for Sara and Niccolò that had to be tough to compete after, you know, a team before you, you know, goes lights out kind of. So I could see why they said that. But they landed on the podium still, despite those mistakes. two-time world junior champions Anastasia Melikina and Luka Buruvala were fourth overall. The surprise mostly for many of us was Deanna Stiletto-Dudek and Maxim Deschamps. They were seventh after the short program. They finished fifth overall, so a better outing in the free skate for them. I talked to them after their free skate, and I asked Deanna how it felt not to worry about her Canadian citizenship, and her response really was interesting to me. She said she got it in under the wire. Now, she obtained her Canadian citizenship in December, and if she didn't get it in December, she possibly would have had to start all over again based on our current administration. And so I just was like in awe. Then I was like, wow, how close she was to getting it. And, you know, now I'm kind of nervous about some of the other skaters that we know of that are trying to obtain citizenship in the U.S. If this may be something that we have to be worried about, given our current U.S. administration. Team USA's Ellie Kam and Danny O'Shea and Elisa Efimova and Misha Mitrofanov finished 6th and 7th, and with their placements gives Team USA the opportunity to earn another spot for the Olympics. I was in the mix zone with Alicia and Misha when they saw the scores come up for Ellie and Danny, and one of the other journalists, J.R. Walker, said to them, "Guys, you did it." And they were elated, and it was really cool to see that moment in person with them. And then, to talk with Ellie and Danny after, they're skated and, you know, finding out that, you know, the two teams did enough to, earn the opportunity to compete for that third spot. So for the Olympic spots for pairs, two spots, US, Italy, Canada, and Germany. One spot, Japan, Georgia, Hungary, Australia, Uzbekistan, Great Britain, Poland, and the Netherlands. And as I just said, the U.S. has the opportunity to earn a third spot at the Beijing competition in September. And now Japan, Georgia, Hungary, Australia, and Uzbekistan have the opportunity to earn a second spot at the Beijing competition as well. For world spots, Team USA has three spots for next year's Worlds, and Italy, Canada, Germany, Japan, Georgia, Hungary, Australia, and Uzbekistan have two spots. So that's a little recap of the pairs event. I was really happy for our U.S. pairs teams to get that opportunity to compete for that third spot and to have two top 10 finishes at Worlds. That was great, and the skating was great for the pairs event as well. It was a really good way. It seems like it was so long ago now, but because it ended on Thursday and now it's Monday, but it was a really good start heading into the rest of the disciplines during the week.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the women. We had a bit of a surprise as Alyssa Liu took the lead after the short program, and reigning world champion Kairi Sakamoto was fifth in the short program. Alyssa delivered a great short program to finish first. She followed it up with a fantastic free skate to win the U.S. Women's first world championship since 2006, which was Kimi Meissner. One of the press conference highlights, she's very happy. It means so much to her. She's never regretted anything in her life. Some of us in attendance just, you know, can sense this difference in Alyssa from the Alyssa that we knew back when she retired at 16 and this Alyssa, who is more mature. And I, you know, she's had more life experience, and I think she just comes into skating with a different attitude, and it's really great to see her go out there and succeed.
Yeah, I have to say one thing about Alyssa's free skate. So, you know, in the media, you're not allowed to really cheer or given a standing ovation or do anything, you know, of that magnitude. And about, I'd say about, she was almost done with her program. I looked to my left and I saw Jackie running. And I was like, what is he doing? He's running down, like, behind where he was seated, and he was running and running back and forth. So afterwards, I said to him before the women's press conference, I said, Jackie, why were you running? And he goes, well, because I couldn't cheer, and I couldn't stand, so I ran. Because that's one thing I can do. And so I said, well, I didn't care. I got up and I clapped and gave her a standing ovation because that was amazing. I was so happy to be in there. When she got through, I'd say that her like second to last jump, I knew it right then and there. She had nailed that program. And the crowd was really getting loud. And it was just, oh, I was so excited to be there. It felt like a party. I was talking with some other people afterwards, and they said it was just this big party after she was done. I mean, she was skating to Donna Summer. It was an upbeat song. It was a really cool, fun experience. And so, yeah, I'm just glad to be there. And you know, 19 years since a U.S. lady has stood on the podium, the top of the podium at a world championships is just, it's crazy. And I know they were referencing in the press conference that she is 19 and it was, you know, same amount of time that there was a U.S. lady on the top of the podium at Worlds. Not the same year. She was born in 2005. And so she'll turn 20 in the summer. So not the same year, but that was a cool kind of reference that, you know, 19 years ago, and she is 19. So
breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Well, Kiari Sakamoto delivered a fantastic free skate to Music from Chicago to claim the silver medal. This is her fourth world medal overall. Her press conference highlight, she said she put out everything that she has, that she was able to do, and was satisfied with her performance. She also said she can now be the underdog, and this was an important experience to have ahead of the Milan Olympics. I agree. And just watching the reaction of Kaori while she was watching Alyssa and then also watching Monet Chiba and just, you know, the show of camaraderie between Kaori and other skaters just, you know, showcases what a leader she is in the sport and how much respect that others have for her and what she's accomplished, especially over the last couple of years. Monet Chiba, who was second after the short program, takes home the bronze medal, her first world medal. In the press conference, she said she can't believe she won the bronze. She kept her focus and kept fighting until the end. She couldn't imagine she would be on the podium. And it was, again, seeing the reaction between Monet and Kaori and the hugs and just the show of support was really heartwarming. Isabel Levito, who was third after the short program, finished in fourth place. She had to skate clean if she wanted a medal, given that she skated right after Kaori put up that huge score. She did fall on her first jump. Her mixed zone highlight after the fall, she wanted to stop the program and for it to be over, but she said she felt that she had finished the program strong. She was proud of herself for doing that. And, you know, that's a lesson, I think. When you make a mistake on the first jump, I can see where it would be so easy to want to just start over or stop. And these athletes go out there and have to keep pushing through the whole program. And that's hard. And so these are lessons that they get to learn. And these are life lessons that you can take with you outside of skating as well. Amber Glenn, who was ninth after the short program. Unfortunately, she missed her triple axel in the short. Ended up finishing fifth overall, which meant all U.S. women placed in the top five. In the mixed zone, she said she was proud that she ended the competition on a high note, but she said she didn't feel great this week and admitted that it had been a tough month since nationals and has been dealing with a lot of grief and loss. Amber lost her grandmother, plus all of the grief that was associated with flight 5342 and the crash, and she also lost her dog. So she's had a bit of a rough time, but Amber is a fighter, and I think we really saw that. Even in the short program, after she missed her triple axel, she fought through the rest of the program and finished as well as she could. And I think that, that's a testament to her being able to push through and fight. Surprise in sixth place after the short program, we have to bring up Madeline Skeezus. I mean, she skated so well in the short. She ended up finishing in 11th overall, which was her best career finish at the World Championships. She had no regrets, and she trained really well going into Worlds. We should mention, I think we mentioned this the other day when we did our brief podcast, Anastasia Gubanova of Georgia, expected to be in the top 10, potentially contending for a podium spot, just did not have her best skate in the short program and failed to qualify. So she will be someone that's going to have to go to the Beijing qualifying competition. But here's how the Olympic spots do stack up. The U.S. and Japan each have three spots. Korea and Switzerland have two. One spot for Belgium, Estonia, Canada, Italy, Kazakhstan, France, Israel, Austria, Finland, Romania, Poland, Bulgaria, Great Britain, and Lithuania. Because there are more spots available in singles than in pairs or ice dance, that's why there's a lot listed there. Belgium and Estonia will have the opportunity to earn another spot at the Beijing qualifying competition in September. I bet we know who will go to represent Belgium, because hopefully Luna Hendricks will be back and we'll be able to go and get that second spot. Georgia will have to compete, as we mentioned, to get a spot, and Gubanova will, I believe, have the opportunity to do that, so... For Worlds, three spots for the U.S. and Japan, and two spots for Korea, Switzerland, Belgium, and Estonia. And that brings us to the dance event, which was very interesting. 36 teams started the competition. We had to wait a while before we started to see those cues popping up. It was a little nerve-wracking, I guess, just waiting to see how teams would score, because for the most part, the teams that skated early skated really well. And so as the scores were coming up, I had guesstimated that it was going to take like a 68-70 to qualify, and it was pretty spot on there. We did have some strange things happen, though. Finland's Julia Turkola and Matthias Wirsluis had a mistake where Matthias fell at the end of a footwork sequence. It originally knocked them out of qualification for the free dance, which was a huge surprise. I was not expecting it. No one was expecting it. I think it just really shows that dance is incredibly competitive, and even if you are a top 10 team, if you make a mistake, especially a fall, you could be out of the qualifying. It shows just how close things are. Unfortunately, not long after, Allison Reed and Salius and Brulevicius also had falls and finished behind Turkulam versus Luis, which allowed the Finns to qualify for the free dance by 0.01 over the Lithuanians.
That's what kills me, is how close that 1/100th of a point. Ugh.
Yeah, it's incredibly close. And if you look at the rhythm dance scores, the teams that did not qualify, I mean, 68.08, 67.69, 66.57. I mean, these were teams that skated really well in the rhythm dance. And for the last time this season, I'm going to say, I really believe another qualifying group for dance needs to be added. The level of competition and quality has risen so much since it was removed. It's time now to add another group back. Because I'm looking at the teams in that would have been in that group, and we're talking about Allison and Saul, plus Yutana Yoshida and Masaya Morita, Victoria Mani and Carla Roethlisberger, Maria Ignateva and Danny Semko, Mila Rudwrighton and Nikolai Majorov. These are all, you know, teams that they should have qualified. It's, yeah. And I also think it will continue to drive the teams behind them to work harder to get into those spots. I also want to point out one other thing before I talk about the final results, and that was Elizabeth Kachenko and Alexei Kolyakov of Israel had an accident at the European Championships that caused Alexei to be off the ice, and they were just able to come and skate at Worlds, not at their best. You know, they can skate better. They can get better scores, but for them to just be here and be able to compete, I think was a really big deal. And so it was great to see them go out and skate as well as they did, given, you know, the recovery.
Yeah, and they weren't the only ones, not to jump off. Danny O'Shea actually skated injured as well. He had hurt his foot just before the World Championships and wasn't sure he was even going to be able to compete and put up a really good skate despite it. But yeah, so I'm glad Elizabeth and Alexei got to skate. But yeah, some of those, you know, some were having injuries as they were competing or just made it, you know, like Isabeau and we know was injured as well. So glad that skaters had the opportunity to still compete despite the injury, and hopefully now they'll take the time in the off season to get fully healed and ready for the Olympic season.
And Gina, did you feel it as well? I felt like there was an intensity. Athletes were under a lot of pressure.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
And you could see based on reactions, it wasn't the normal, oh, this is my score reaction. It was the, oh, did I do enough reaction? Did I help my country get a spot at the Olympics?
Yeah.
And I could feel that.
A lot of nerves.
A lot of nerves at this competition. There was so much at stake. And I've only been to 3 World Championships, so I've never been to one that was a pre-Olympic one. And this one just felt really intense. And I'm just, you know, hoping that at the end of the day, people are happy with what they were able to put out.
Yeah. I don't know what skater said it, but they, in the mix zone, I can't remember. I talked to so many, but they said they were scared to go out there. And then they had to say to themselves, why am I scared? I love the ice. This is home.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, to just hear them say they were scared of the thing they love to do so much, you really could feel that there was that tension, that stress, that nervousness through every, you know, all of the competitors, I think. I don't think there was one person that wasn't nervous at all to go out there. So yeah, there was definitely you could feel it in the air that there was a lot
absolutely
of stake going on.
Absolutely. So, that being said, Madison Chalk and Evan Bates won their 3rd consecutive world title. This is the most of any U.S. ice dance team. Piper Gillis and Paul Poirier claimed their 4th world medal, 2nd consecutive silver medal. In the bronze medal position, this is where things got a little different. Lila Fear and Lewis Gibson became the first ice dance team from Great Britain to medal at the World Championships since Jane Torval and Christopher Deem won the world title in 1984, so like 41 years ago. Also, I have to say that it was really... The free dance placements were kind of all over the place, which is not something that I have seen a lot in dance, where, I mean, Lila and Lewis won the bronze, but they were sixth in the free dance. Charlene Guignard and Marco Fabri, who have medaled at the last couple of world championships, ended up finishing fourth. They were fourth in both segments. Interesting thing, Marjorie Lajoie, Zachary Laga were fifth in the rhythm dance and eighth in the free dance. And finally, Olivia Smart and Tim Deke, who have to be the most improved ice dance team this season at the senior level, were eighth in the rhythm dance, third overall, third in the free dance to finish sixth overall. And this is a team, last year they were 19th at Worlds.
Yeah.
They put the work in the off season and ended up in sixth place. Puts them in a great position for next season. I was looking at the scores overall, and the bronze medal was won with a score of 207.11. And Charlene and Marco had 206.46. But behind them, Christina Carrera, Anthony Ponomarenko, 204.88. They finished fifth overall, which is their highest placement at Worlds. Very exciting and interesting free dance results.
Yeah.
So for Olympic spots, US and Canada each get 3. 2 spots for Great Britain, France, Finland, and Czech Republic. 1 spot for Italy, Spain, Georgia, Germany, and Korea. Now, Italy, Spain, and Georgia will have the opportunity to earn a 2nd spot at that Beijing competition in September. Lithuania will need to earn a spot at the competition since Allison and Saul did not make the free skate. So I have no doubts that they are going to be working hard and we will see their best at that competition. For world spots, US and Canada have 3. 2 spots for Great Britain, Italy, France, Finland, Czech Republic, Spain, and Georgia. So that sets up things for Worlds for next season.
Yeah. Well, the men closed things out at the World Championships, and Ilya Malinin won his 2nd world title. I don't think it was a surprise to many that he was going to take the title. He was attempting to go for 7 quads. Did not happen. He did 6, I guess, clean. He had a quad axel and his quad toe were slightly under rotated and he doubled one of his quad lutzes. But, you know, he threw in the backflip, of course, that had everyone in the TD garden going crazy for that. So yes, he is now a 2-time world champion. I think for me, though, I kind of had him as like a dark horse. Kazakhstan's Mikhail Shuradov was third after the short program. He took the silver medal and became the first male skater from Kazakhstan to win a world medal since Dennis Ten won in 2013. He completed that jump that we've all been talking about, the triple axel Euler quad sow. He's the only skater to do a quad as a 2nd jump. And I think I heard in the press conference or the mix zone, I can't remember which, that he's going to try next season to make that a flip, a quad flip. But that was really, an outstanding skate for him. It was clean. I think he might have just had like a level 2 for a step sequence or something like that, but a really great skate. I think he surprised a lot of people in that arena. Again, given his performance at Four Continents, I knew he could kind of come in and be like a dark horse and kind of, you know, get onto the podium. And he was quite surprised at himself that he did so well. A little disappointing for Yuma Kageyama of Japan, who was second after the short program. He struggled a bit in the free skate to finish 10th in the segment. He doubled his quad flip. He fell on a quad toe. He singled a triple toe. Those were just some of the mistakes he had. But still, he manages to get onto the podium at Worlds. At first, I kind of thought he wasn't going to after that free skate, given how some of the others had done prior to him competing. Adam Siho Himfa, who, you know, had a disappointing 9th place short program. It wasn't like his skate was in Montreal where he was in like 19th place, but he did come back. He had the 3rd best free skate. And Daphne, you were up sitting near me for the men's free skate, and we kind of kept saying after some of the skaters, after Adam skated, and Adam is still in first. It wasn't as long as we did it. You did it when you were in Montreal, but you did it have a couple times saying, and Adam is still in first, and Adam is still in first. Yeah, he just missed the podium, finishing in 4th place. Kevin Amos, who was in 4th after the short program, finished in 5th. He had good skates in Boston. He was 7th in the free skate, but, you know, still a really good finish for him. You never know with Kevin what you're going to see from him, and I was really happy to see him skate well in Boston. Shun Sato finished in 6th place. He was 5th after the short program and 6th in the free skate, so he was finished 6th overall. Junwon Cha, who was 10th after the short program, moved up to finish 7th overall. He was 5th in the free skate. Jason Brown, a favorite of many, he was 12th after the short program. You know, a little disappointing for Jason to be, you know, that far behind, but finished 8th overall and had a really good free skate. Actually, his free skate was the 4th best free skate of the event. And so, of course, you know, the fans loved that. I will have to say the other American, Andrew Torgashev, had a really disappointing free skate. Just a really tough to watch. He finished 22nd overall after being in 8th after the short program. So it was, yeah, it was disappointing to see him. I'm guessing the nerves really got to him there. Dennis Vasiliev's, I have to mention, he had a really great free skate in Boston. He finished in 11th overall, but he had the 9th best free skate. Nika Agatsi was 9th, and Nikolai Memela were 10th, and they had, they were, you know, 6th and 7th after the short program, and so they did drop a little bit in the free skate, but a really, you know, good men's free skate. A lot of skaters there, you know, skated well. I was, again, for me, the highlight definitely had to be Mikhail, because he just skated really well. And I think for a lot of people, it was kind of a surprise because maybe they weren't really sure who he was. So for the Olympic spots, the U.S. and Japan get 3 spots, 2 spots for France, Italy, and Latvia, and 1 spot for Korea, Kazakhstan, Georgia, Switzerland, Canada, Azerbaijan, Slovakia, Sweden, China, Estonia, Spain, and Poland. Now, France has the opportunity to earn a 3rd spot at the Beijing competition, and Korea, Kazakhstan, Georgia have the opportunity to earn a 2nd spot at that competition. For the world spots, 3 spots for U.S., France, Japan, and Kazakhstan, and then 2 spots for Italy, Korea, and Georgia.
I have to mention that Nikolai Memela in the Kiss and Cry after his short program, when they were interviewing him, talked about Ashley Wagner, because Ben actually came out to interview him, and he's like, where's Ashley? I wanted to mention that I was thinking about her 2016 hip hip chin chin. He was not the only one that mentioned that. Somebody else did mention that, and I can't remember who it was. But that really made me laugh to hear him say that.
Yeah. And he had his message to the crowd was standing tall in my skates or something like that.
Yes.
And I think for some people who have not seen him skate before, they were mentioning how tall he is out on the ice. Yes, he is very tall. And so, but yeah, some of those cute messages and those post interviews too were fun too, because some of them did, you know, like mention Ashley or just say some fun things.
So Nikolai is 6'4". So for a skater, that's really tall. The last really tall skater I remember is Laurent Tobel, and that's like from way back. So when we wrap up, we got a couple things to do. We wanted to talk about the ISU Figure Skating Awards that took place during the banquet or around the banquet or after the banquet, right around in there. So most entertaining went to Ilya Malinin. Best newcomer was Ekaterina Ganish and Dmitry Chigiriev. Best costume, Olivia Smart and Tim Deek. I'm really glad because that Dune program.
I'm wondering, really, Daphne, do you think they're going to keep that Dune program for next year for the Olympics?
You know what?
I think they should.
In ice dance, it is customary to not keep your programs more than a year. I don't know why that exists just for dance, but it's just a thing. So best coaches, Tatiana Malinina and Roman Skornyakov. And of course, they coach Ilya Malinin. They also coach Sarah Everhart and some others. Best choreographer, Shaylin Bourne. Lifetime Achievement Award, Scott Hamilton. And Skater of the Year, or should I say Skaters of the Year, Ilya Malinin and Madison Chalk and Evan Bates.
So I wanted to share a funny story. There were a lot of legends at the World Championships, including one being Katarina Witt. And I have never met Katarina Witt. Or I don't think I've ever interviewed her. So, but I got a chance to talk to her while I was in Boston. And it's kind of funny because we were both standing in line for the bathroom. And the bathroom that was by the media area was also happened to be the changing room for the sweepers. So we were standing and waiting for the sweepers to finish changing to use the bathroom. And I was standing at the front of the line. And when it was my turn to go and use one of the bathroom stalls, I went in and I looked and there was no toilet paper. And so I'm like, oh, crap. Okay. So I left the stall and I was like, well, I'll just go to another bathroom. I'm not going to wait around any longer for the sweepers to finish and whatever. But the next person in line would be Katarina Witt. And so what do you think the first thing I say as I exit the stall? There's no toilet paper. So my first encounter with Katarina Witt was, there's no toilet paper. So I just, it's funny. I was sharing that and I thought I'd share it. She then did go into that stall and she asked the sweepers that were in the other stalls to pass toilet paper to her under the stall. She was great. She, after that, like a few minutes later, she was talking to the media along with Gracie Gold and Nathan Chen. We had an opportunity to talk with the three of them. It was just like a Legends mixed zone appearance. So, and there was a lot of media. I couldn't actually get too close to ask a question to any of them just because everybody was there in the mixed zone at that time. And we're going to close with another story that just kind of randomly happened. So Saturday night after the event ended, I was packing up my stuff and I decided not to stay for the men's press conference because I knew I needed to drive home the next morning and I wanted to get to bed earlier than I had the previous nights. So I said, okay, I'm going to skip the men's press conference knowing that it would take a while. So after I packed up my stuff, said goodbye to everyone I wanted to say goodbye to, we took some photos. Liz, she is one of our friends, fellow journalists, and I, you know, started walking towards the shuttle. And as we were walking towards the shuttle, this gentleman from the ISU, I don't know his name, offered to take my bag and he took it down and he kept calling it the money bag. And as we walked out the door, they told us, oh, just wait inside a little bit because the shuttle was not there. And as we went back in to the room, I turned to my left and I go, oh my God, that's Vincent Joe. So I turned and I said, hi, Vincent, it's Gina from This Week in Skating. Now, if you've been listening to This Week in Skating for the past 3 years, you know we've had Vincent on our podcast not once, not twice, but three times. So it took him a little second to realize who I was, and he was like, oh! And him and Liz and I took photos because the ISU guy who had carried my bag was kind of funny, and he was like, take some funny photos. So we took some funny photos with Vincent. And Vincent then said to me, well, where's Daphne? And I said, well, she's in the media room. And he goes, well, let's go. The shuttle's not here. So we went back in, and Vincent had just gotten into Boston that day. So he had no clue where he was going. So we had to go back through security. I'm taking him into the media room. And I called Daphne and I said, don't leave. Whatever you do, don't leave. I'm bringing someone to you. And she had no clue. So we get to the media room. And of course, Daphne's not in the media room. And I'm starting to panic at this point in time. And I asked Danielle and Tina, our friend photographers, where's Daphne? And they're like, hold on, she's just in the bathroom. I said, okay. So Vincent and I stood there, and all of a sudden, there comes Daphne. I go, Daphne, look who I have. And I'll let you take it from there, Daphne.
I was completely surprised because I didn't have any idea what was going on. Like, Gina just said, don't leave the media room. Because I was getting packed up because the same thing. I wanted to go back to my hotel, get my bags packed, and be ready to go home the next day. And so when I rounded the corner, I saw Gina, but I didn't see who was with her. And then I saw Vincent, and it was so awesome because we have had great conversations with him on our podcast, and he always wants to adopt my cat. So
even though he's allergic to cats,
so it was just so great to have that kind of be my last experience at the World Championships, because after that I left the arena. So it was so fun to end 2025 Worlds by getting to meet Vincent after having him on our podcast so many times.
So, yeah, we took some photos with him. We chatted with him briefly, but then he needed to get back on that 11 o'clock shuttle. So I quickly got him back to the shuttle. They held the shuttle for Vincent. I guess they knew he had gone back into the arena, which was great. And there were some fans who were waiting to, you know, get autographs and photos with him, and he was gracious to them. And so it was, as you said, Daphne, it was a great way to end the World Championships, because, you know, when an event ends, you're sad, especially when it's the last event of the season and you don't know when your next event is. And I always get sad every time I walk out of an arena after nationals. I'm like, oh, here we go. And depressing. You got to go back to work. Got to go back to the real world. And so I was feeling that a little bit too, because it was, again, the last event. But then seeing him and just having that little time to chat, just so happened, if I didn't, you know, walk out at that exact moment, we might have not gotten that chance. But I'm glad we did.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great way to end it. I am grateful that it serendipitously happened. Just to let you guys know, we're pretty much near the end of our season. We are planning only a couple more episodes, including next week. And there'll also be a season recap. And we'll probably do an episode on the World Team Trophy. But we are nearing the end, and we will be taking a break again so that we can gear up for the Olympic season. So we're probably going to be taking a little bit longer than usual, or we may come back with episodes that are spaced out a little bit more. You know, I know we've talked about this before. Podcasting plus running individual sites on the sport as well is, you know, a lot of work. And in order to make sure that we can give 100% of ourselves to both the podcast and to our websites, we need to be refreshed and ready to go. So just a few more episodes coming out. We will do some interviews, so we may keep you busy with those during the off season. Those are pretty easy to do. And we have some ideas, because one of the things that took place while we were there was the ice dance meeting, talking about the rhythm dance for next year, which will be 90s. And I'm excited based on what I've heard. I think it could be a lot of fun. I like 90s music. There are a few places that they can go with that, so stay tuned.
Yeah.
We'll probably talk about that on a future episode.
Yeah, and I liked asking some of the skaters about the 90s as well, so stay tuned. I may be writing a little something for IceDance.com about the 90s as well. So, yeah, and I had some ideas for podcast interviews, too, while I was at Worlds, and that I was throwing out to Daphne and Mateo, so you might see some of that coming down the line. But yeah, we're going to be winding down and taking a little break just so that we can be ready for the long Olympic season.
Definitely. And I think with that, we will end this episode. We will be back with you next week to talk about synchro and any other news that came during this week. Until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Week in Skating. Remember, you can keep up with us throughout the week by visiting our website at www.thisweekinskating.com. Connect with us on social media for additional updates. You can find us on Twitter at This Week in Skating without the E's, or Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at This Week in Skating. You got a burning question or feedback for Gina, Daphne, or Mateo? Reach out to us via social media or drop us an email at thisweekinskating@gmail.com. And if you're really enjoying the show and want to support us further, consider joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/thisweekinskating. Until next time, have a nice week.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.